I think people are going to want to be around each other. You know, there's to know what life is like for a month or 2 months when you're not around other people. You know, after that 5 or 6 months of probably people still being freaked out, there's going to be that newfound respect for being around other humans, or at the very least video chatting or phone calls. So I think, you know, going forward, there's a new appreciation for human connection that's been developed over these 2 months. And then with the healthcare workers, a new level of respect for what they do day in and day out.
Welcome back to NYC Local Guides. I am your host, Jennifer O'Brien, and I interview New Yorkers from creatives to CEOs and everyone in between. For more NYC resources like ebooks and videos, visit nyclocalguides.com. If you've ever wondered what it takes to be a New Yorker or just want to hear some crazy stories, keep listening.
This is a Brooklyn-bound 2 express train. The next stop is...
Cole Riley came to New York to attend NYU and recently pivoted his company, Founders Market, to become Founders Give, to organize the largest food drive in New York City history to support the doctors and healthcare workers on the front line of the COVID-19 pandemic. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey. Hey, Jennifer. How you doing? Happy to be here.
I'm so glad to have you. So let's start with a little bit of background about you. And number one, do you consider yourself a New Yorker?
I do. And I originally came to New York to study, to go to NYU when I was 18, so 10 years ago. So now I've been here for 10 years. And I think, you know, when I talk to people and they ask me, hey, so where are you from? I'm from LA, but I was raised in New York. And I think that, you know, makes me a New Yorker. And especially after you log a decade here. So, yeah.
Absolutely. So how do you define a New Yorker? I know some people say exactly that, 10 years, but I like to say it's experiences, and like we get a little badge for all the crazy things that we go through. So, you know, what might be some of the experiences that you feel like define a New Yorker?
Totally. I would say, you know, from being here for 10 years, the consistent thing, year over year, it seems like I'm always moving. And I think that's the thing. A lot of my friends and here in the city, that's kind of a nice shared experience, whether you're in Manhattan or Brooklyn, whether you're studying or working. Every year, there's some type of big move that I'm involved in. I've lived in so many different apartments, so many dorms while I was in school, in and out of offices, in and out of WeWork. I feel like I've always been moving across the city, you know, carrying mattresses into the 6th train, racing across the Manhattan Bridge to return a U-Haul on 23rd Street. And I got to jut across Manhattan to get this U-Haul in before I get charged an extra day. So when I think about my time in New York, I mean, a whole vast amount of experiences in the city, from graduating college, graduating law school, meeting my wife, building companies, meeting people. But the thread across all the 10 years, and this is not just for me, but for so many of my friends, it's just constant state of movement and moving my stuff from A to B. So that, I think once you start logging moves in the city, and given all the restrictions and problems with moving trucks and new leases and trying to get accustomed to new neighborhoods, and you've done it enough, I think you can actually call yourself a New Yorker, a hardened New Yorker.
Tell me more about your journey to New York and why you chose to come here to NYU.
Yeah, so I grew up in LA and I liked LA. You know, you know, I had my friends and my family, and that was my base. And, you know, I grew up in the Valley. But I just had that hunger to leave and go to a city that I can kind of really call my own, where, you know, I'm 18 and I can kind of start from, you know, from square one, trying to learn a city from scratch. And New York just was like the automatic option, but I didn't have any friends or family out here. It just felt like the biggest city. I always had very grand aspirations, not very focused aspirations, but always grand aspirations. And I have applied to so many schools across the country. Really, it was mostly on the East Coast, but so many schools. And I got into Fordham and I got into NYU. And it was just like an automatic. It's like, I got to go to New York, and NYU was the top school I got into. And so that whole journey, though, coming out here, I came here out here on my own. I had told my parents to stay. I don't want you to help me move. I want to do this thing on my own. We'll ship some boxes out. I'll bring a few luggages out, and I'm going to figure this thing out on my own with no real friends or anybody out here waiting for me. And that was, you know, an interesting time. You know, it was like 2009. And it's weird to say that, you know, that it's 10 years ago. But, you know, it was a steep learning curve on how to live on your own, try to figure out what type of person I want to be, what I want to study, this new school, new people, no resources to fall back on. And that was, I think, what grounded me and kind of helped me. You know, I had to go through a lot of different obstacles to kind of figure out who I wanted to be and is this the right city to be in. And that first year was a great learning experience. And that's, you know, that was the foundation for these next 10 years and for as long as I believe I'll be living here for the rest of my life.
So what was it like going to NYU where you don't have a closed off campus, but your campus is the city?
The fact that NYU had an open campus and was embedded in the city was a huge reason why I chose to go there. I wasn't interested in going to a school and to a city that was just kind of, you know, off in the middle of nowhere, its own little college town. The high school I went to in LA was kind of like a college campus, with the facilities and the way it was laid out and the types of people that went there. It just felt very college-y already. So I wasn't really hungry for that type of like big sports school with its own campus tucked away in some random suburbs. I like the idea that, you know, you're walking amongst the general public, that the quad is Washington Square Park, that there really isn't a striking demarcation line between, you know, what is school and what is the city. It's just kind of all together. And, you know, I lived in you know, the dorm at NYU at Hayden Hall for a year, and then I lived in a dorm for that summer after, and then I was ready to get out and live in my own apartment. And that, I think 2010, I was ready to get on my own and kind of like truly just use go to school but have my own place and really, really start, you know, this quest to become a New Yorker and live here and live on my own and figure out things on my own. But yeah, being able to go to school and not have it feel like it's its own entity, like it's just a part of the schedule. I was working during the day, going to school at night, and it wasn't this 4-year commitment that is just on its own. It's all a part of these 10 years that I've been here. And that's the same for not only NYU, but when I went to law school after Brooklyn Law School, it's got its little, you know, campus, but it's right there. It's right next to the Brooklyn courts. It's the subway is right there. And it's the same idea where it's just kind of embedded in the city.
Awesome. And then when you were, before you came to New York, I'm sure you heard all sorts of stereotypes about New Yorkers. When you finally came here and were living here, what were some of the ones that were proven right and proven wrong?
I mean, I knew always the stereotype of New Yorkers having a chip on their shoulder, being very direct, and very clear with what they want. And that's definitely a stereotype that's true. It's a stereotype that I've embodied as well. And I it's one of the things that's kept me around and why I like New York. And whenever I go back to LA, it's something I despise about California is this very like relaxed attitude, this unwillingness to be very direct and as to what exactly you want with, you know, because of fear of insult or, you know, getting, you know, coming off as being mean. I like the idea of just being very direct. And that's something that, you know, has always been a New York stereotype. And it's something that I am now that I've grown to become very direct, very clear. And even if it's, you know, a little harsh, a little rough, it's something that it just gets the point across with whatever you want, whether it's a burger or a job or whatever it is, you be very clear, even if it's rough on the edges.
That was such a good answer. I like that. And I like that comparison there. So do you have any favorite New York City hidden gems? Could be food or otherwise?
I mean, I lived in West Village and Greenwich Village for 6 years. And anytime I'm on Hudson and anywhere near Christopher and Hudson, I got to stop at San Pinino and get a number 6 cold prosciutto and mozzarella with basil and balsamic on focaccia. Like, I have to grab that. I don't even care if I'm not hungry. I just have to buy it and like store it and just have it.
So in general, what was the biggest issue you saw during this current pandemic situation, and how are you working to fix it?
So I was in the middle of launching a company called Founders Market, where we were profiling, doing original programming on the founders of all these really cool food and beverage brands, you know, kombucha companies and cold brew companies, mostly out of Brooklyn. So we were doing all these behind the scenes cooking shows, all this stuff with the founders. And I got to know them really well and get to, you know, really insert myself into the larger food and beverage community here in the city over these past 6 to 7 months. But I had launched the company in January. We were going to do content and eventually a marketplace. And, you know, we're doing that. And it come March, this pandemic is starting to grow and get a little more out of control. And I see my friends, these founders, having issues getting their products into hospitals or into nonprofits or just in the hands of healthcare workers. And these are all premium products, really pretty much better for you products. And, you know, whether it was no contacts within the hospitals or, you know, minimums that needed to be pushed into a nonprofit, or, you know, they, you know, certain hospitals or certain nonprofits don't want to handle glass or cold products, a lot of restrictions. I just saw this consistent problem over these 2 or 3 days in March. And I thought to myself, well, what if I acted as an agent? What if I was able to bring these 8 or 10 brands that I could see they're complaining on Instagram, bring them together, put all their units together, all their inventory together. Maybe it's like 10,000 units if you add it all together. And I approach hospitals as the one voice. And let's see what happens. And so that was March 20th. I didn't have logistics. I didn't have trucks or warehouses or anything that I have now. But I had these commitments and they were like, yeah, sure, let's see what happens. And that's when I started reaching out to hospitals, cold calling, saying I represent, you know, X amount of brands, and started to put the building blocks together for Founders Give to streamline donations from food and beverage brands into hospitals.
I love that. That's such a smart way to pivot. As everyone's saying, you know, it's the time to pivot. You really did it in a way that helped everyone and, you know, connected those dots. You're so right. All these companies did want to donate and had to go through all these different hurdles. So tell me more about what different food and drink options medical professionals had before these donations.
So what they were going through for a couple weeks before, and then what's been happening since I started Founders Give, is just a slow retreat of regular food distribution into the hospitals. You know, less orders were being placed by the hospitals to, you know, the vending machine companies or the companies that stocked the cafeterias with snacks and drinks. The hospitals were beginning to shut down the cafeterias inside because they didn't want people to congregate, and they just weren't placing orders for snacks and drinks. Distributors, some smaller distributors, also didn't want to deliver to hospitals anymore. So at the end of the day, what was happening was doctors and nurses and staff members were stuck in the middle between these big hospital systems that rightfully needed to shut down some of these areas and focus more funds towards PPE and other resources that they had to bring in. But these staff members were stuck in the middle between the hospitals and these food distributors. There's no product coming into the hospital at the end of the day. And you started to see a lot of different initiatives pop up and local restaurants rallying and donating meals, you know, 200 meals here, 300 meals. And that's great, but there were still no snacks and drinks. And I don't know about you, but I find that snacks and drinks are vastly more important, because you can bring a meal in from home. You can make a sandwich and bring it in for lunch. I mean, a lot of people do that already. But being able to have access to high quality premium granola bars and bags of chips and, you know, drinks and coffee and things like that, that's what fuels and sustains a day. That's what pieces your 2 to 3 hours today together. So you have a snack and drink, little mini meals, little hummus cup. And then you go out for another 2-3 hours on your shift, you come back, grab something else. It's less about meals, it's more about the snacks. And there weren't any going in. And so starting with those initial brands, I was able to rally together, then bringing on logistics partners for storage and transportation. I was able to not only identify that need and that problem in all the city's hospitals, but be able to bring in brands to, you know, collect those products and get them into the facilities quickly and efficiently. And, you know, looking at the problems for brand on the brand side, you know, like I said, they were having trouble communicating with hospitals. They were having trouble just getting the product in, even if they broke through the communication barrier. But the bigger brands were having another issue too. There was too much product. They wanted to deliver pallets and pallets and hundreds of thousands of units, and the hospitals couldn't take it. It's too much product. So again, solving that issue on that side, you know, for some it's too little, for others it's too much. And that's when, you know, I started to see, wow, we can build something really, really big. There's this need that will continue to replenish week over week. The snacks and drinks will run out. People will eat them. So we're going to need to have to bring more. And I can bring in not just these small independent Brooklyn brands, but some of the largest food and beverage companies in the country who were struggling to get their product into hospitals. And that's what I did. And over these past 5 weeks, I've been able to scale up from just those 10 brands on that one Saturday to now 300 brands. And we've collected 2 million individually wrapped food and beverage products, snacks, yogurt cups from Chobani, hummus cups from Sabra, Kind bars, kombuchas, seltzers, coffee. And we're working with 38 hospitals in New York City, where we intimately know what the needs are, what the capacities are, and we tailor these deliveries to exactly what each hospital needs and what they can actually store.
Amazing. Wow. I really seriously commend you at organizing all of this, and it must have taken a lot. So how did you stay organized, and you know, do you have any tips on how to organize something so big? What did you, you know, how did you do that?
What's proven to make founders give extremely efficient and effective, and for some of these brands, they call it the most efficient donation process they've ever been a part of. And these are some of the biggest brands telling me that. But what's made it so effective is it's just me. So I'm the only person talking to the hospitals, and I'm the only person talking to each of these brands and the logistics companies. It's just me. So when I'm talking with a company, especially a company that's quite large, national reach, and, you know, $10, $20 million in revenue at least, some of these really large brands too, and they want to ask me a question about a specific hospital and their refrigeration, I can answer it right there, and I don't have to wait and ask, hey, you need to talk to this other person, a part of my team. It's just me. At the same time, it's been insane. It's turned my days into 20-hour work days. I'm on the ground 75% of the time in the warehouses, 25% of the time in hospitals. It's been an insane schedule, and all of it is managed on my iPhone and with 4 different Google Sheets grids that are tracking every product that's coming out, coming in and going out, all the different partners, all the communication I'm having, all the different hospitals. I've got this insane tracking procedure, and it's allowed me to bring on a lot of companies very quickly. And next week, what we're doing is bringing on Colgate to do toothbrushes and toothpaste. And see, you can expand beyond just food and beverage. I've created the streamline, the pipeline at least, between brands and hospitals to get product in effectively and quickly. And now you can plug in other product categories, but it's just me. That's a little bit by design. It's also kind of just how the chips fell, because a lot of my friends just don't want to get on the ground. They don't want to go to the warehouses. They don't want to go to the hospitals. And, you know, there's only so much you can do remotely. A lot of this needs to be done on the ground. You can't just sit at a computer and try to solve this issue. You literally have to walk through ERs and walk with doctors and see what the problem is on the ground. But it's been an insane amount of coordination. But so far, it's quite a well-oiled machine, and it can almost start to run on autopilot with fulfilling these orders and bringing product in and getting it out.
So can you compare for me the first delivery to now and how you've streamlined the process?
Yeah, the first delivery, and you know what's really changed over these 3 weeks of deliveries, 5 weeks total of the initiative, 3 weeks of deliveries, and we've delivered 1 million products so far. The first maybe 30 or 40 deliveries, I would go on the actual delivery with the truck driver. I'd be trailing with my own car. And I would be there on the dock, and now on the loading dock. And now what's happened is I've had so many different trucks leaving at once, hitting so many different hospitals at the same time, that I just decided to play air traffic controller from the warehouse with my AirPods, just talking to different drivers, solving issues as they pop up. But that first delivery was to Lenox Hill. I believe that was March 30th. That was at my first hospital that was very excited to partner with me. And they've been a great partner, Lenox Hill. And, but, you know, beyond me being there and now just playing air traffic controller, it's been kind of the same deal where we're bringing in at least 10 to 15,000 units every single time we get off the truck. We're not doing four cases through the front door and handing them to a doctor. We're bringing in volume that can be spread out and distributed throughout an entire hospital facility. So you're looking at Lenox Hill with 4,000 staff. You can't get away with just bringing in a few cases. You know, we're bringing in a lot of product so that each corner, each doctor is stocked and taken care of. But, you know, it's been a consistent stream since delivery number one, but I've had to pull myself back because I just can't be at four places at the same time.
Can you tell me more about the future and how you're going to, you know, continue to help serving medical professionals in the future?
I look at the next few weeks as this continued streamline of products coming into our warehouses and going to hospitals. And we're plugging in other categories like toiletries or socks or sheets, working with brands like Colgate Palmolive, Ombis, Casper to solve other needs. But when I start to sit back at night, when I have like 5 minutes to just rest and not think about some grid and products and all these different ways of tracking all this stuff, when I have a few minutes to think about what is the long-term plan here, I paused a content company and I love what we were going to do. And I don't want to just get rid of that. But there has been such an incredible response and such an incredible impact with what Founders Give has become and what it is doing right now. That I want to build this out into a national 501c3 organization that rallies brands and effectively responds to natural disasters or plugs into city social programs like public schools or homeless shelters, but working with brands hand in hand, not opening it up to individuals to donate cans of soup. If you can streamline brands to put their product together, especially product that maybe expires in 3 months that they have to get off their warehouse floor, you can really accumulate a huge amount of product and solve a lot of problems very quickly. So, you know, I'm still focused on responding to the needs right now. They're going to go down the needs. It's going to stabilize at least over the summer. But I want to build out something that can grow here in the New York region, eventually the Eastern Seaboard, and then across the country with different cities, and different logistics centers, and different brands, solving problems across the country, and building a team around me that can expand it. I'm in New York City. I mean, we're not in Cincinnati doing this. This is the, you know, ground zero of this whole corona problem. And you would think this problem would be solved by one of these existing nonprofits. It wasn't. It took me to kind of come up with this idea and bring all these massive brands and small partners on board. And I want to build on that and fold in some of those other ideas I had with Founders Market. Great storytelling the entire time, making sure that you're showcasing these brands and what they're doing, how much product they're giving, the impact that we're having, the people that are receiving it. And then also maybe eventually some type of consumer marketplace. So I have a long-term vision. I want to build out Founders Give into a national organization and solve issues not only here in New York for years and years, but across the country.
So why Founders? When you first started Founders Market, I love this concept of having founders talk about their products. So what made you really lean into Founders?
I think that founders can and should, and sometimes are, the best influencers for their own brands. We see it time and time when a founder gets on camera on a commercial. It's been actually increasing a lot more. You'll see more founders for, you know, Ring or, you know, Roman or car insurance. You'll see a founder up there randomly talking about it. And see, I still say randomly. There's a person who started the company. They should be out there talking about it. That's how we used to have it 100 years ago, 80 years ago. Campbell's and Hershey's. Who are these people? Who are these names? They're actual humans. And I think right now we're growing more and more cynical about influencers and the influencer industry. You know, I think there is a role for influencers for sure, but I think that founders need to reclaim ownership over their brand, over their message. And I think people are hungry to connect with a product, with a whole company on that personal level, and knowing who makes the product, even if they're not making it anymore and they have a huge production operation. I think it just gives you a different sense of trust. It's a different way to discover a product. And, you know, you see with QVC, QVC probably does it the best. It's very archaic, you know, it's very 90s the way it's done, and it's on TV also. But you can take what QVC does, modernize it, focus on, you know, better for you brands, food and beverage and beyond, and make product discovery and purchasing much more personal. Not bloggy. You don't want to be doing these long 7-minute videos that nobody wants to watch. Create short form content that gives you an idea of what the brand's all about, what the mission is directly from the founder's lips. And, you know, I think there's a hunger for it. You see little bits of it here and there. And that's the type of company I wanted to build with Founders Market. And that's why Founders Give exists, because of those founders getting involved at such an early stage and still getting involved day over day, bringing new products into the fold. But I love the idea of a founder, and I love the idea of putting them front and center of their company to talk about what they make and why they make it.
I completely agree. And I've seen it time and time again at different companies I work for. The founder is always the best person at the sales meeting and the market to do the marketing and to do the conferences and things like that, because they have the pitch. So, you know, it's not something that they're memorizing. It's something that they saw this problem. They can speak to it on a personal level. So I completely agree. I think the founder is always going to be the best marketer and, you know, should always be the face. And I completely agree with that. So you were a filmmaker and a storyteller originally. How did this also help you give you a foundation for the current endeavor in, you know, storytelling in marketing this current company that you now have with Founders Give?
Totally. And also a lawyer and a yogurt maker and a real estate agent at one point and a million different things. But when it comes to what I was doing for at least this past 7-8 months, trying to tell stories, one, you know, just behind the scenes, becoming ingrained in the food and beverage community here in New York. But, you know, on the front side, you know, I want storytelling to be a big part of Founders Give. I think it should be. It shouldn't just be some passive thing that we send a photographer out to do stuff. I think that storytelling why brands give is a big part of what I want to build and what I've been trying to tell. You know, it's been very difficult as a one-man band trying to do the content on top of all the logistics. But long-term, I think it's important to be able to communicate with people, especially eventually when they become, you know, I'm asking for donations eventually from people, to be able to showcase the brands that are involved, the impact that's being made, the people that are receiving the snacks, the drinks, the goods, and why it matters. And over video and, you know, text and photos, I want to be able to communicate that with an audience. And, you know, those 8 months of going around filming, trying to figure out how to tell short form stories and get people excited about a brand. Well, that's kind of exactly what I'm going to be doing on the storytelling side and the content side for Founders Give, you know, short form videos to you know, really rally and inspire people to contribute or just to follow along with the Founders Give movement.
You also founded a yoga company. Tell me about how that helped you recognize the importance of a founder and these smaller food companies.
Yeah, and I started the yogurt company after being a private lawyer for 2 years, helping startups kind of get off the ground, do all these corporate formalities, and decided I wanted to do my own product. And try to bring something to retail, shirt company, maybe manufacture something, food. And it landed on yogurt, New York State being the biggest yogurt state in really the dairy capital of the country, maybe of the world, where all the major yogurt brands are. It's upstate New York. All the U.S. operations of all these European yogurt brands are in upstate New York. And New York City being maybe the premier retail destination in the country. And so I was like, let's bring a product to market. I launched a yogurt company in 2018 and working in upstate New York and, with my hands, working with an existing yogurt facility and trying to make, yogurt cups and drinkable yogurt, a whole slew of stuff and try to sell it and, get into retail across the state, in the city and upstate, and trying to get into little bodegas down here and grocery stores up there and, learning and realizing like it's very difficult to start a company and try to do it. And getting a greater appreciation for what founders do and what some of these larger companies had to start with, which is just one guy or one girl just kind of in a room making something and then trying to sell it. And so, that greater appreciation, that experience that I got running a yogurt company, that stuck with me with everything I've done since, from Founders Market to now Founders Give. That these founders are underappreciated, or they don't even maybe, realize how much they've put into their own business. They're so caught up with manufacturing and selling that they don't really get an opportunity to sit back and, show off a little bit, show off that they are the salesperson, that they are the manufacturer of this really cool product. So, I think that experience has carried over with everything, it will carry over with everything that I do, that appreciation of the founder, the small business, the person who makes the product and goes out and sells it. It's very tough. And I had to shutter that yogurt company because it was too tough for me. And so I bow down to anybody who continues to go in there, and especially in food and beverage and manufacturing, and then go out and try to, get a grocery store on board. It's amazing.
Amazing. That's such great perspective. And so the last question, what positive comments and messages have you received from the medical professionals after deliveries?
Delivering to 38 hospitals, all the major systems, well over 100,000 healthcare staff. It's been an incredible response. And I know there's other initiatives out there and they're doing great work, especially with meals. But we are the number one distributor of snacks and drinks. So, Kind bars and Chobani yogurts and cold brew, and these hospital staff workers, they, all the way down from the loading dock personnel to the security guards and receptionists up to the surgeons and nurses. They are all so appreciative and can't believe how much product is coming in. Not just the fact that there's snacks and drinks, and all mostly better for you, but just the sheer number that's coming in. It's been a great response. We've helped fuel these healthcare workers as they, work these extended hours, these back-to-back shifts. And we're solving other needs too, beyond food and beverage. So the response from the hospital operations teams down to the people on the ground, it's been incredible. It's inspired me to want to continue and to continue building out Founders Give beyond just COVID. But it's been a really amazing response every day. And it's what gets me up in the morning to go over to the warehouse at 4 a.m. and kept me up at night at midnight while I build out packing lists and coordinate more stuff. It's been amazing. And I really look forward to the future for Founders Give.
Can you tell me a little bit more about what you think it'll be like post quarantine for medical professionals and for everyone? How do you think maybe our culture and New York City will change and adapt?
There's definitely now a brand new respect for healthcare workers, not only in New York, but just across the country, across the world. It is this sacrifice that's made every single day. It's kind of like with cops and military. I think now we're going to start to respect the healthcare workers at that same level. When there was national anthems and all this, thank you for your service. Well, that thank you for your service, it may expand to the doctors and staffs that work every single day, in emergency rooms, not just here with Corona, but just every day on regular problems every day. But looking forward to, kind of where are we going to be as a culture, as a city? There are, obviously it's been highlighted some positives and glass half full outlook on what's been happening with how we have connected at a different level, a little bit more of a personal level. It seems like we've been, ever since we've been kids, just this growing disconnect between each other. You know, as the technology has advanced, we've grown more and more accustomed to not wanting to talk on the phone, not wanting to, you know, even video chat, you know, not wanting to even be around each other, just wanting to text and just kind of be on our own. And over these past few weeks or months, we've wanted to see each other more. I just think just that flip, just simply with video chat, wanting to do more video, it's kind of reset a little bit how we want to interact with each other. It's gone from text message to video really rapidly. And so going into the future, as we start to go back outside, I think people are going to want to be around each other. You know, there's to know what life is like for a month or 2 months when you're not around other people. You know, after that 5 or 6 months of probably people still being freaked out, there's going to be that newfound respect for being around other humans, or at the very least video chatting or phone calls. So I think, you know, going forward, there's a new appreciation for human connection that's been developed over these 2 months. And then with the healthcare workers, a new level of respect for what they do day in and day out.
Absolutely. I love that. And I totally agree. I think that makes a lot of sense. What is your wish for everyone to learn from this? I love also you're talking about connections. Any other lessons that you think people can learn from this?
We really do have the tools to make a big difference. Not maybe within one of these types of disasters, but just in general, just making a big difference, making a big impact. We have the tools right in our hands, these iPhones and our computers and Google Docs and Google Sheets. And you really do have, you don't need to have 30 years running a warehouse. I mean, you can learn very quickly. It's just about, you know, trying to identify problems and then solving them. I mean, it really takes that. You can identify problems and you can solve them very quickly and learn. And that's, you know, what I've tried to do over these past 5-6 weeks is, you know, I saw the problem. I've tried to figure out a solution, but I really had to lean on some people that had a little bit more knowledge than me. And you just act quick and you start tracking stuff and you just got to get going on it. And I think we've got the tools. We know there's a lot of problems out there, not just with Corona, but beyond. And it's up to us to take action to try to solve them. You know, I'm tired of hearing about homeless shelters or kids with like public school lunches that, you know, the lunches aren't good for them or they don't even have lunch. Like there's just these old tired problems. And we hear about all these different organizations that are raising all this money and they donate all this stuff. And it just doesn't seem like anything's making an impact. You know, it sucks to be cynical about it, but you know, why are these problems still existing? I just think that our generation is in a position with the tools that we have in our hands to change a lot of these, change the direction of a lot of these issues and solve them once and for all. And it just takes decisive action. That's something I've never had really before. I've never done before. But with Founders Give, I took action very quickly. I was very, very stern about it, very New York about it. This is what I want to do. This is how I want to do it. And got it done. And we're going to keep doing it for these next few weeks, next few months here with COVID. But I want to keep solving problems across the country with Founders Give and not just resting on the laurels or just, you know, saying, well, maybe somebody else can solve it. I'm going to do it. And I think other people can take that same approach to problem solving. Just get it done.
And is there any way that, you know, anyone can help contribute? Like, how can I help contribute? How can others help?
Yeah, the primary way for people to get involved right now with this COVID response is to hit us up with a brand that you think should be, you know, would be great with this, or hit them up, you know, DM a brand, your favorite brand, and say, hey, you got to check out Founders Give. You know, we think that, you know, your products become like an ambassador for Founders Give. Reach out to your favorite food and beverage brands across the country and tell them that they should get on the Founders Give pipeline and get their product into NYC hospitals. You know, most brands I talk to, they have been doing little things here and there, sending boxes to different doctors that are requesting it. But whenever they get on the phone with me, there's a huge sigh of relief that they can move significant inventory into hospitals that need it here in the city. And so it's really just about getting on the radar of more brands. And, you know, going into the future, there's going to be an opportunity to donate to this cause as we build it out. So obviously, I'm going to be looking for donations and people to support our long-term mission of building out this, you know, national distributor of donated product. But right now it's about just getting more brands on board, more partners in the fold, and just following along and supporting us, even with comments and likes on Instagram at Founders Give. Those little things, knowing that there's a whole community of people across the country just rallying us and supporting us just with on social, that's what keeps us going and keeps me going. But yeah, there's several ways right now, but long term, where there's going to be a lot more ways for people to get involved, volunteering, and donating to the cause.
Great. And so I was going to ask, where do we find and follow you? Is it that on all social?
Yeah, at Founders Give on Instagram and foundersgive.co. That's where you can see our updated delivery routes. You can see photos on the ground. You'll see me running around the warehouse and hospitals. You can follow at Founders Give on Instagram. If you send a message to that account, that's me receiving it. And I'm probably in the middle of running around doing a million different things, but I get back to every single person and connect with as many people as possible. And that's where you can follow along and see what we've been building and where we're going to be going to.
Thank you so much for all that you do. And thank you so much for finding the time today to talk. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely, Jennifer. Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed today's show, please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. For more NYC resources like ebooks and videos, visit nyclocalguides.com.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.